We're holding Tetsudai and Bay's four lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday that Gemara was talking about a couple of places, Talmud and Kaudu, where there's the concern that the people over there might have Jews mixed in among them who are actually Mamzerim. I was mentioning yesterday, by the way, that there's an opinion that if a Jewish woman and a Goyish man have relations, that the children might be both Goyim and Mamzerim. I was wrong about that, actually. It's one or the other. Well, there's three possibilities, really. There's a machloikas in the Gemara, whether in that case Havlad Mamzer or Havlad Kosher, and we'll be touching on that today also. Within this that we're saying, Havlad Kosher, there is Tosfos over here, and also in Ksubos, I think, in Kedushin, says that Havlad Kosher means the child is a Goy and not a Mamzer. They're not a Mamzer because it can't be a Mamzer and a Goy at the same time, but they're Kosher in the sense they could become Gerim, but they're Goyim. And then the third possibility is meaning Kosher as in a Kosher Jew, which is the halacha as we know it nowadays. So we've been talking about this idea that in Talmud and in Kaudu, so you have this mixture over there. There are Jews who may not realize that they're Jews, and therefore there's concern about, the concern about Mamzerus is twofold. First of all, according to the opinion that if a Goy has relations with a Jewish woman, the children are Mamzerim, then you have that. Second of all, you might have, even if the ones there who are Jews, or even if you hold according to the opinion that they're Jews, not necessarily are they being careful about Arayas. This is a similar issue, actually, that was brought up when the Ethiopian Jews started coming, when the Ethiopian Jews started coming to Israel in the 80s, one of the concerns that was raised is, even if we say that if we say they're Goyim and they need Gerus, fine. If we say they're Jews, though, you might have a real problem. There might be issues of Mamzerus among them. First of all, because not necessarily are they careful, they didn't know, are they careful about not marrying their close relatives, as defined in the Torah. Second of all, even if they are, what about Eishes Ish? They have Kedushin, they don't have Gerushin according to Halacha, so you might have a problem. But this is a similar kind of thing over here. So having talked about that, now the Gemara goes off on a tangent a minute to talk about a similar kind of thing, where we have a problem with we have a potential problem with people from certain places where we're not sure whether they might be Goyim or Jews. Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Asi, Oved Kachavim Shekedesh Bizman Hazeh. If nowadays a Goy goes and is Mekadesh, a woman, Choshin the Kedushin, a Jewish woman, Choshin the Kedushin. We have to be concerned that it might be a valid Kedushin. Shema Me'aseret HaShvatim, because maybe this Goy is really from the Aseret HaShvatim. The Aseret HaShvatim, well, now, when we say over here he might be from the Aseret HaShvatim, there's two possibilities what we mean over here. Rashi says it means that we're concerned he might be the descendant of one of the men of the Aseret HaShvatim who married Goyish women. But according to this way of looking at it, though, we might be concerned. Rav Asi might be holding this. Now Rashi learns Rav Asi might be holding that, in fact, the child is a Jew but a Mamzer, which we'll get to soon. That doesn't fit the halacha as we know it. But that might be Rav Asi's opinion.
On which basis?
On the basis that's how he holds. But there's a Gemara about in Kedushin also that deals with it in more detail. But whatever, we'll get to it soon over here. Tosfos learns it differently. That the issue is more. The issue is rather that you have the Jewish women might have been together with Goyish men. Now, soon the Gemara is going to mention an opinion that no, in fact, that never happened, or that it did happen, but they didn't have children. We'll get to that soon. Obviously, Rav Asi, according to that, doesn't agree with that. So he might well say, again, going back to what we were saying before, that Oved Kachavim Ve'Eved Abab Asi Yisrael Havlad Mamzer. So therefore, you're back to the problem. But on top of that, also you might have he's a Jew, but a Mamzer, but he doesn't know that. He thinks he's a Goy, so he's doing Kedushin, and really he's a Jew. If you hold that a Vlad Mamzer or a Vlad Kosher, either way, if you hold that it means that the child is a Jew. It's interesting, by the way, when we get to something else, so we'll get to something in the middle of Yedayin and Aleph, there's an interesting thing that Marshall says on this, so we'll get back to that soon. Anyway, the question is, the Gemara asks, what do you mean? Called the Parish, Murdova Parish. The Gemara assumes right now that this means any Goy anywhere in the world, that if he's Makadish, Chosh, and the Kedushin. The question is why? You have one Goy ostensible Goy out of millions of Goy or billions of Goyim out there, you go according to the Roy. The answer is beduchta dekvi. True, but we're not talking about anywhere in the world. We're talking about in the area where the Bnei Aseret HaShvatim are kavua. The places, which the Gemara is going to list now, based on the pasuk, where we know that the Aseret HaShvatim were taken into Galus. So Rashi says it's one of those cases of kol kavua kamechsa al mechsa dami. Oh, hello. It's one of those cases, kol kavua kamechsa al mechsa dami, when we know that something is established in a certain place, even if really numerically it's the minority, we consider it as though it was a half and half camp. We have the case we have the cases in Sochim about the pile of chametz and of matzah. We had one or two other places. We had the classic case that talks about it in the Mishnah, which is the source for this whole thing, where you have 9 butcher shops in town that sell kosher meat and one that sells treif meat. So here, the idea would be, if you go to one of these places where the Aseret HaShvatim were taken into Galus, and this guy comes from there, then he's kavua over there, because the Aseret HaShvatim are kavua over there, therefore it's kamech tzal mechsa. Tosfos says, no, there's a difference. Not necessarily, because we're talking, Tosfos basically, well, Mephoshim explained that according to Rashi, that would work out if the guy, if the Jewish woman comes to the guy's house and he's mekadosh her there. Because then, yeah, he's kavua. As opposed to if he leaves his house and goes and finds a Jewish woman and is mekadosh her, maybe we wouldn't say he's kavua anymore. He's not kavua. He's not in his original place. So therefore, Tosfos gives a different explanation. In these places, actually, in these places where the Aseret HaShvatim were taken into Galus, they wound up being the majority there. So there, for sure, you have to be concerned that the people there are from that majority. The Amr of Abba. Well, so maybe it doesn't mean the specific house, but like if he leaves his village to go to, yeah, all right. The Amr of Abba Bar Kahana, the Pasuk describes when Sancheiro took the Aseret HaShvatim into Galus, it says, Vayanchem, he led them away, Bachalach uvachover nahar goizan va'ore modai. What are all these places? Chalach zachilazon, name of a place in or near Babel. V'chaver zuchadiyev, nahar goizan zuginzak, v'orei modo zuchamdan v'chaver seha. The city, the modo is Hamadan, or is the modern day Hamadan in Hamadan, whatever, in Iran. V'chaver seha, and the town's nearby. V'amri lo zu nihar v'chaver seha. They would say it's nihar, or nihavand, it says in Sibushin. There's another city in Iran. V'chaver seha, and the city's nearby. Actually, there's an interesting thing the Marshal brings from the Aruch, that some or all of these places might actually be in Eretz Ashkenaz, which sometimes in Tanakh, Eretz Ashkenaz doesn't necessarily mean what we call Ashkenaz Germany. It means an area more like near Turkey, Kurdistan, Armenia. That's part of the world. But apparently, the Marshal and some later Mefarshim who discussed this Marshal say that maybe what the Aruch means is actually that some of these places are in Germany. Historically, there is a known thing that many captives after the Churban Bayis Sheni were taken to that part of the world. That some historians say that that's where the origin of the Jewish communities of that part of the world comes from. Of Jews who were brought there. No, I'm not. I'm talking about in Germany. In what we think of as Ashkenaz, Germany, Central Europe. Okay, Chavreseha man. When we say Chavreseha, the nearby cities near Hamadan or near Nihar, which ones? Omashmo, Krach, Mushki, Chiddi, B'dumakia. Names of cities in that part of the world, in Iran, or in western Iran, or eastern Iraq, whatever. And Rabbi Yochanan says, you should know, when we're listing all these places, it means you have to assume anybody from these places is possible. Because again, what will happen? The Aseret HaShvatim went there into Galus, they got mixed in with the Goyim, and you have a problem of Mamzerus. And Rashi says that the problem of Mamzerus is not only the issue that we were saying before, that according to the opinion that a guy who consorts with a Bat Yisrael, that the child is an Eved, you have a different matter, that these people not necessarily were careful about not marrying their close relatives. So they might be Mamzerim on that ground alone, even if we said that otherwise they'd be Yisraelim Kshedim, but the fact that they're not careful about this means that you have to assume that people from these places are Mamzerim. No, according to everybody. Well, according to almost everybody, I should say. Right. No, because even according to Rabbi Yeshua, who's the most nakal, he still says that Mamzerim are from Chayve, Mrs. Bastin. Some of these cases over here, Rashi gives two examples, a sister or a daughter. A sister is only an Issacharis. Right, that would only be according to the Chachamim. A daughter would be, even according to Rabbi Yeshua, that makes a Mamzer, because it's Chayve, Mrs. Bastin. Okay, so far, that's what Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Rabbi Asi, that if a goy from one of these places in the Kaddish of Asi Yisrael, there's concern that he might be descended from the Aseret HaShavatim, and therefore he might really be a Jew. Because on the assumption that what we mean is that he might be the descendant of a Jewish man from the Aseret HaShavatim who lived with a goy, who married or lived with a goyish woman over there and had children, that this would be according to the opinion that such a child is considered a Jew. Ki Amrita Kameh D'Shmu, also... Well, that's what we're coming to now. Ki Amrita Kameh D'Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda says, when I told this word over to Shmuel, Amali says to me, how could that be? We know Bincha Habam in Yisrael is Kori Bincha. You're only your child who comes from a Jewish woman is called your son. Ve'en Bincha Habam in Haveres Kechavim Kori Bincha Ela Bina. But a child from a Jewish man, from a Jewish woman, is not called your son, he's called her son. So Rashi brings over here the limud. How b'chlal do we know this whole concept? The Jewishness follows the mother. We have a pasuk in near the end of by the end of Parashat Vaskanan that says you're not allowed to intermarry with the goyim like the schat and bum. Why ki yosir es bincha me'achrei? Because he will turn away your son from following me. Now what does that mean? So the word is like this. The pasuk says ki yosir, according to Rashi. The pasuk is saying ki yosir, he will turn away your son. Not ki tosir, she will turn away your son. Meaning, therefore, we have to be talking that the he means the goyish husband of a Jewish wife.
Makes the
child is a Jew, but the father, the goyish father, is going to influence him to turn away from Yiddishkeit, and that would be a problem. As opposed to when it's a goyish mother, you can't even say ki tosir as bincha me'acha. She's not even bincha. She's not even your son. There's no she's going to turn him away from the Eivishter because he doesn't belong to the Eivishter. He's not a Yid. That's how Rashi learns the limud. Tosfos brings a couple of other possibilities, what it means. One of them is similar to what the Rambam says. The Rambam learns differently, that the vort is, ki yosir es bincha me'achrei, is referring actually to the goyish grandfather, the father of the woman, the father-in-law of a goyish man who marries, of a Jewish man who marries a goyish woman. He is going to cause your son, your Jewish son who marries this goyish woman, his son-in-law, to turn away from the Eivishter. And he's going to cause the grandchild also to turns him away from the Eivishter in the sense that he, because of his daughter, this child is not Jewish. He's turned away from the Eivishter l'chatchila. So however exactly you learn the limud, but that's the inyan, that a child of a goyish mother is a goy. So what are you talking about then that these people could be Israelim? There shouldn't be an issue. I think Gemara asked about Ikabonos. Okay, fine, but what about, that takes care of the Jewish men who went into Golus. What about the Jewish women from the Aseret HaShavatim? L'chora, if they end up with Goyish men, either in marriage or in rape or whatever, then their children are going to be Jews, and you still have the potential problem of Mamzerus. The answer is, V'Amar Ravina. And Ravina says, Shmamina, we see from this, Ben Bitcha Abomina Ovet Kachavim Kori Bincha. And Ravina adds to what Shmuel said, that we see from the implication of the pasuk, that your grandson, who comes from the father is a goy, the mother is a Jew, so your daughter's son, whose daughter has relations with a goy, the child is still a Jew. You might have the problem then, that don't you have then? You presumably have Jews in these places who might be mamzerim. The answer is Gmiri, we know for a fact that the women of that generation, the Aseret HaShavatim, were taken into Golos in these places, were Itzeruye. Rashi explains that Itzeruye comes from a word that means to split. Their wombs split open, so they were unable to have children. Rashi says, because Rashi doesn't give the reason why. So some Mefarshim say it means that it means partially from the hardships of the road. They weren't used to going like that, walking hundreds of miles into Golos, so it affected them. Other Mefarshim mentioned different possibilities that the goyim violated them so much that it damaged their reproductive system. And then the Meiri brings a couple of interesting possibilities that it means that these women themselves, they didn't want to be in a position where they're going to end up having children with these goyish men. They specifically went and either sterilized themselves or made themselves so unattractive so that the goyim wouldn't want to have anything to do with them. Whatever it is, the point is, none of them ended up having children with these goyim. So therefore, you seem to be covered on all grounds. The men, if any of the men ended up taking goyish wives, doesn't matter, the children are goyim. They're full-fledged goyim. If we say that, as far as the women, they didn't have children, the Jewish women. So you're covered. So you seem to be covered. So therefore, that goes again. What Ravasi is saying, you shouldn't have a problem with any guy from these places. Ikadamri, others say a different version. That Rabbi Yehuda reports, Diamrita Kamei de Shmuel, when I told over the Zvart of Ravasi to Shmuel, he said a different thing according to the second version. Amalei, Lo Zazu Misham Ad Shasom Ovi Kachamim Gmurim. The Chachamim did not move from there. In other words, immediately, as soon as the Aseret HaShavatim were taken into Golis, the Chachamim at that time immediately sat down and declared them complete goyim. As the pasuk says, "Vashem bogdu." They rebelled against the Eved. They were treacherous against the Eved. Ki bonim zorim yaldu, because they gave birth to strange children. So, in other words, according to the second version, no, these women perfectly were able to continue giving birth. Any children that they had, the Sanhedrin, the Beis Din of that time, declared those children to be goyim. Now, there's an interesting question. Is this are we talking about a one-time thing, or does this establish a general precedent that when Jews go and become shemadim, rachman al-islam, and convert to another religion, that we consider them goyim? That's what we're assuming, that they assimilated among the goyim and then took on their ways. There are actually some of the goyim who hold that way, that yes, the Yisrael Mumer is considered a full-fledged goy. They talk about it as far as issues of chalitza and yibum and marriage and so on and so forth. There's a number of the goyim actually hold that way. And Marshal, based on Tosfos over here, has a very interesting idea. The Marshal says that actually it really depends on what the kid wants. If the kid wants to grow up as this kid who has a Jewish mother and a goyish father, if he wants to be a Jew, he can be a Jew. If he doesn't want to, he doesn't have to. In this case, the Chachamim of that generation realized that none of them are going to want to live as Jews, so they declared them goyim. But ordinarily, the Marshal says, as a general rule, it's up to the child to decide. Marshal argues with that. Many other Rishonim and Achronim argue with this whole concept. They say, Hayitachin, as we all grow up knowing, Yisrael, Agam Shechalti Yisrael, a Jew always remains a Jew. What kind of, maybe over here, you have the one-time thing that they declared them goyim, but that doesn't establish any kind of general thing for Yisrael Mumur. Marshal says, as far as this, the Marshal is saying, but the kid has a choice. What do you mean? You don't have a choice. It is one or the other. You're either a Jew or a goy. The halacha, as we're familiar with, is indeed that, first of all, there's no choice in the matter. Hagam Shechati Yisrael, no matter how far a Jew is from Yiddishkeit, he's still a Yid. And number two, that yes, the child of a Jewish mother and a Goyish father is a 100% Jew. And the halacha is he's not even a mamzer. There is actually, Rabbi Akiva Eger does bring on Shulchan Aruch in Yodea, a daya that maybe you shouldn't make a bris for such a child on Shabbos. Since there is this Manda Omer that says that the child's a goy, maybe you shouldn't be Mechal Shabbos for the Bris. As far as I know, nobody holds that way either in practice. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. But definitely as far as this idea that we should think that such children are goyim, all the posts from Achronim say you can't even, there's not even room to think that we should use that even as a possibility to include with anything else. It's completely off the schlock.
If the husband is a goy.
If the father is a goy, yeah.
If the mother is a
guy, then yeah, that's the lumur that we're saying over here from Kiyotzi has been a chamach, right? The Yerushalmi, by the way, has an interesting story in that connection about a bris on Shabbos. The Yerushalmi actually here in the next parak in Yevamos or whatever tells a story that one time a Talmud Chacham named Yaakov Kfar Giburaya, one or Niburaya, whatever, one time made a bris for such a child that was born from a goyish mother and a Jewish father on Shabbos. So one of the Amoraim from that, to one of the top Amoraim from that time, Reb Chagai, sends him a message: "You better come to my Beis Din. You deserve Malkus." This Yaakov comes there. How you talking? What do you mean? I get Malkus? Where do you get the idea to give such a kid a bris on Shabbos? This Yaakov says, "No, doesn't the pasuk say Vayisialdu Amish Pachosim Leveis Avoisam that you go a person's descend from a shevet goes according to their father." Reb Chagai tells him true, but the pasuk in Ezra clearly says that Ezra is telling the Jewish people to get rid of their goyish wives and their children. So you see that the children go according to the mother. Yaakov says very nice. It says that in Reim. I have a pasuk from Chumash. Doesn't that better? The pasuk from Chumash. You see, I'll do Amish B'chosim, Levei Savoisam. Which, I mean, he had a point with that. When it comes to within Jews themselves, when both the parents are Jews, yeah, you go according to the father to determine what shevet the person is from. This Yaakov made the mistake of thinking that that also applies to whether the kid B'chlal is a Jew. Anyway. Exactly. So Reb Chagai tells him, no, because the pasuk there says in Ezra, V'chatorah Yaaseh, it has to be done according to what it says in the Torah. So Ezra's not making up some new halacha. He's going according to the halacha of Moshe Mitzrayim. So Yaakov ends up agreeing, and he says, you know what, go ahead, give me Petch. It's better than getting Petch in Olam Haba.
Right. But then what shevet does he belong to?
He doesn't belong to any shevet then.
He does not belong to any shevet.
What shevet does a ger belong to? Full-fledged ger, what shevet does he belong to?
Yeah.
That's right. The son of the son of Rav Shlomo Bat Dibri. That's true, right? Yeah.
Nobody wants
him. He's going back now to Talmud. So now we finished with the side thing about the Esaret Hashvatim. Going back now to what we were saying yesterday about Talmud, this place where there's potential mamzerim over there. Yosef Rav Yosef Choder Rav Kahana. Rav Yosef was sitting behind Rav Kahana. And Rav Kahana was one of the top Talmudim. Rav Yosef is like the next generation. V'yosef Rav Kahana kamed Rav Yehuda. Rav Kahana is sitting in front of Rav Yehuda. V'yosef v'kama. He's sitting and saying as follows. Asid in Yisrael, the av v'yom tova kichar v'tamud. The Yidden in the future are going to make a yom tov on the day that Talmud is destroyed. Now, why is that? Rashi says, because since we said before that Talmud is one of these places full of mamzerim, or potential mamzerim, it'll be a great thing when it's destroyed, but then there's not going to be so much mamzerus among the Jewish people. Other Mephoshim say there's another reason also. The Medrash mentions about Talmud that even though we said yesterday it was built or rebuilt or whatever by Shlomo HaMelech, you think they should be grateful to the Jewish people, the people of Talmud actually got involved in destroying both Batei Mikdash. Therefore, there deserves to be a Yom Tov when they're destroyed for that reason alone. Yeah. Talmud was historically destroyed. And then early in the times of Amorim, the city of the famous city of Talmud, Tadmor, whatever it's called, Palmyra, I was saying yesterday it's on the border of Syria, it's not in the middle of Syria, but whatever, was destroyed in the middle of the time of Amorim. The answer was Ahui Tamud, Havoy. That wasn't Talmud that got destroyed, that was Tamud, different place. And then there is actually, I read someplace or other that the Arabs have a tradition about a place called Talmud that was full of Rishayim that got destroyed. Sort of like in their tradition, Talmud is like Sdoim, is like what we think of as Anshe Sdoim. So that could be related to what we're saying over here. Yeah. Anyway. Rav Ashi Yom Hainu Talmud Hainu Talmud. No, Talmud and Talmud are actually both the same place. But what it is it kept on rebuilding itself. Ichbuli hu demachatel. It was able to, it was doubled over. When one side of it was destroyed, Chorev Mahaygis, the Oseb Mahaygis, and it was resettled from the other side. Yosef Chorev Mahaygis, Chorev Mahaygis, the Oseb Mahaygis. The whole city at once was never destroyed. Half the city was destroyed, but then they repopulated it from the other half. There's never been a time the whole city together was destroyed. When the whole thing is destroyed, we'll make a Yom Tov.
The people.
Ashes the people, but the point is not the whole population didn't get destroyed.
Uh-huh.
Another case, Yosef Rav Hamnuna, speaking of Psula Yuchsin, Yosef Rav Hamnuna kamei de Ula, Rav Hamnuna one time was sitting as a Talmud in front of Ula, v'kahavi b'shmaita, and he was fatifing zich, he was asking questions, not fatifing zich, he was going back and forth with questions on the sugya. In a way that we'll see in a minute whether it's Rav Ula felt that like he's going a little too far with it, or maybe Adarabba, that he's a great person for doing this. Anyway, Amar, so Ula says, Ma Gabra, Ma Gabra, what a man, and what a koyach. Elav de Harpanya Mose, were it not for the fact that he comes from the city of Harpanya. Harpanya is one of those places where the people are not miyuchosim, where there's problems with their yichus. Ichzif, so Rav Hamnuna is embarrassed by that statement. Amale, so Ula asks him, let me ask you, Kesef Gogalta Lahecha Yavda, where do you pay your head tax? Everybody in those days had to pay a head tax, basically a tax for the privilege of being a citizen in the country. Which city do you pay it towards? Yeah. And nowadays we have income taxes and whatnot. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, it's a different kind of thing. Anyway. Omele Pumnara. So Rav Hamnuna tells him I pay it to the city of Pumnara, which we learned yesterday at the end that Pumnara was a city in Babel that was all Jews. Amalei, so Ula tells him, okay, you came to Pumnara. In that case, you really belong to Pumnara, not to Harpanya. Now, what's going on over here? Why is Ula first mentioning that he's from Apanya and then kind of walking it back? So there's a few possibilities. One possibility is that Ula was a little upset by Rav Hamnuna. He's going too much with the questions already. So like he had to tell him something. Sometimes, as we learned a few times already, a Rav can give a short remark to a student to kind of put him in his place. But he saw how badly he was embarrassed by that, like effectively you're calling me a mamzer. So he says, after all, you're not really from Harpanya. You happen to live near there, but really you're a person from Pumnara. No, because he's saying he's from Harpanya, which is a place full of mamzerim and full of yichus and whatever, as the Gemara is going to say soon. There's a couple of other interesting possibilities about it. One being Faket, that he's telling him, you're asking so many good questions. You obviously you're from Harpania. In a way, I can understand that you're from there because he's saying Harpania, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, had I think it was in Brachas, had very, very sweet fruit. That kind of thing is marchev, it broadens a person's daf. So he's saying, according to that, it's a good thing you come from Harpania. You it gives you this hachavas daf. But Rav Hamnuna is embarrassed because he knows Harpania has a bad side to it also. So Ullah tells him, don't worry, since you pay your taxes to Pumnara, then it means really you belong to Pumnara. You're living in Harpania, so you get the advantage of eating its fruit without the disadvantage of its problems of yuchsin.
You really belong where you pay your
taxes. Yeah. Actually, there's an interesting story in that connection, I think the story is with Malbim, where one time there was a person who lived in one town and had business dealings in another, and the people of that other town where he has business dealings wanted him to contribute to tzedakah for the city. And he argued, I don't need to, I don't live in your city. They brought the case to the Malbim, and the Malbim showed, not from this Gemara, the Malbim actually showed him from a pasuk about the famous novel, bad guy novel from David HaMelech's time, where the Pasuk says he lived his moin, his business, his flocks, and whatever were in Carmel, and the Pasuk calls him Novel HaKarmeli. So the Malbim says, you see that a person is called by where their business is, not necessarily by where they live. So there's a similar idea. My Harpania, what does the name Harpania mean? I'm going to say Har Shah Kol Ponin. It means the mountain that everybody turns to. By everybody, we mean all the psulim. Anybody who's apostle Yichus and therefore can't find a wife among the people above El, though in general the Jews above El have great Yichus, as we'll learn much later in Kedushin. So anybody who otherwise couldn't find a shidduch would go to a place like this, like Harpania, where all the psulim, hang out. No, it's in Babel. It's in Babel, yeah. But Machnisatana, Braisa says it a little differently. Anybody who doesn't know what family he's from, what shevet he's from, would go there. That's like the bottom of the barrel, kind of. Amar Rava, v'hi amuka mishoel. This place, Harpania, is even deeper than Sheol, even deeper than Gehenna. Shema, as the pasuk says, miyad Sheol efke mimava segolim. The pasuk says, the Eibishter says, I'll redeem them from the hands of Sheol. I'll save them from death. So in other words, we see that Gehenna is not a permanent thing. A person eventually gets out of Gehenna. V'il psul didru lesu takanta. Whereas the psul of the people of Harpania, mamzerus, is never curable. Mamzerus goes from generation to generation. Adur atziri. There is a way, yeah, the moms can marry a shifcha knanis, and then their children are avodim, and you can free them. Yeah, the Mishnah talks about that at the end of the third parak of Kedushin. First of all, Rabbi Huda there disagrees. Second of all, it's not such an easy thing to do, not for a whole city full of people. Yeah, the person who goes, who would go to these kinds of cities to get to find a wife is somebody who himself is questionable.
Yes. Questionable or a normal woman?
No, the women of Harpania, that's the point. The people of Harpania in general are questionable, Yichus. That's what we're saying.
He's finding somebody on his level.
Yeah, basically.
He's not like supporting somebody to...
No. Yeah. Bigmo points out, psula de Harpania, mishum psula de Mishun. The reason why there are psulim in Harpania is because of the psulim of Mishun. Mishun is more or less the southern bit of Iraq and Kuwait nowadays. In those days also it had many psula yuchsin over there, many mamzerim and other psula yuchsin. The Gemara mentions in Kedushin, the Gemara has an expression of their mishun mesa. Mishun, as far as yuchsin, is dead. Like, there's no possibility of good yuchsin over there. It is interesting, by the way, actually, Rav Shura Goyen and his Igeres mentions one of the early Goyenim who came from there, Rav Chiya Mimishon, which I guess goes to show, as with the famous thing, Mamzer Talmud Chacham, Kodem Lekoyen Gavla Maaretz. He may, I don't know, I have no idea whether he was a Mamzer, he came from Mishon, though, so at least his Yichus may have been questionable, but he still became one of the Goyenim. Anyway, so people from Mishon, in other words, wound up in Harpania. Upsula de Mishon Psula de Talmud, and the Psula Mishon come there from Talmud. Upsula de Talmud, Mishon Abdi Shloimeh, and the Psula of why they apostle in Talmud in the first place, we said yesterday, because Abdi Shloimeh, who forced Jewish women to marry them. Behind her de Amri, and this is like the expression people have. Kaba rabba v'kaba zutta, the big kav and the small kav, which means two dishonest weights, because you're not allowed to have two weights that are supposedly the same size. Gander v'ozel, they roll down and they go l'sh'ol into Gehenim. U'm'sh'ol l'tarmud, and from Gehenim, they keep on rolling even lower to Tarmud. U'm'tarmud l'meshon, u'm'meshon l'harpanya. So we see Harpanya really is the bottom of the heap there. What does this mean? This kabbal rab of a kabbal zota. Marshall relates it to the idea that we say that there's 10 kavim, the famous gemara in kedushin, that there's 10 kavim of various things that came down to the world, including in particular the 10 kavim of chutzpah and 10 kavim of laziness. In the case of chutzpah, 9 of them mamzerim took. In the case of laziness, 9 of them avodim took. Since we're saying that in Talmud they had avodim. And in Mishon and Harpanya they had mamzerim, and that's what we're saying, that the big kav and the small kav, the kav of laziness and the kav of chutzpah, roll into these places. That's where they find their homes.
Why should a mamzer have chutzpah? Even the usher is a low person. Who knows who he is?
Maybe not. But in general, we say actually one explanation before about this business with Rav Hamnuna and Ula. One of the other explanations is what happened over there is that after Ula sees that Rav Hamnuna, at first he thinks Rav Hamnuna is from Hapanya. He might be a psul yuchus. We need to announce that he's a psul yuchus so people know not to marry him. When he sees he gets embarrassed, he realizes, oh, he can't be a mamzer. Mamzerim don't have a sense of embarrassment like that. So he realizes he must be a kosher yid. He lives in Hapanya. Okay, but he's not really a Harpanya person. He's a Baishan, so he really belongs to Pumnari. He just happens to live in Harpanya. Hadron Allah Chamesh Esri Nashim. Back to matters of Yibum. Kate Mishnah says, Kate said, Eishas Achav Shalahai Bar Lameh. How does the case of we have the 14th case in the first Mishnah, Eishas Achav Shalahai Bar Lameh, where a brother was born after the original brother died. How does that work? How does she pass her tzara? Shnei achim, so you have two brothers, umes echad mehen, one of them dies, benolav lehen ach, then a new brother is born, v'achachach yibam masheni es eishes achiv, then the second brother, Shimon, does yibum with his brother's wife, umes, and then the second brother dies, and he was married to a second woman as well. Harishona yotza mishum eishes achiv shalahei b'alamri, the first woman goes out and is potter from any further chalitza or yibum because she's eishes achav shalahei bar lamai. Vashniya mishum tzarasa, and the second one is potter because she's her tzara. In other words, here's the case over here. You have the two brothers, each one is married to a woman. Reuben dies, Shimon does yibum with tzara.
Which is the two brothers?
Reuben and Shimon. Reuben and Shimon, the blue ones. Yeah. Reuben dies, Shimon does regular yibum.
Yes.
After that, actually the Mishnah is listing it the other way, really, that the Levi was born before the Yibum was done. Well, we mentioned in the first parak we had the day of Reb Shimon. About that, we'll get more back to that later in the parak, tomorrow or the next day. So Shimon does Yibum. Later on, Shimon dies. We're saying Sarah is Eishes Achav Shalahei Bar Lameh because she had the original Zika, she was originally married to Reuben, and Reuben and Levi weren't in the world together. And her Sarah is Potter because she's a Sarah of Eishes Achav Shalahei Bar Lameh. Now another case. Osaba Maimer. What happens if Shimon did not do real Yibum, did not do full-fledged Yibum with Sarah before he died? He only did Maimer. We mentioned in the first parak, and we're going to have much more in the Masechta, that Maimer is Midrabanan, you're supposed to be Mekadesh, the Yavama, before you actually do Yibum. This Maimer helps Midrabanan, it makes you husband and wife, but it doesn't help Midaraisa. Midaraisa, you have to have Yibum, you have to have the actual beer. So now, Umes, and then Shimon dies. Shnia chalitza v'lemis yabemis. Then the second woman can only pass to do chalitza. She cannot do yibum. Why? Because on the one hand, midaraisa she's nothing. She's not sarasa because nothing's been done yet. There was only a maimer done, not yibum. But midrabanan she is because the maimer was done. So therefore, she has to have chalitza to take away the zika that exists midaraisa. But the zika with Rivka just from Shimon
right.
That exists midaraisa, but because it's also midrabanan, she has to do chalitza.
So Shimon did maimer
with Sarah. Yeah. Had he done yibum, then that's what we're saying, that they would both be completely potter because she's eishes achiv shalahei bar lameh and she's her Sarah. Since it's only maimer, she's not a tzaras eishes achiv shalahei bar lameh. Because Shimon and Levi were together in the world. Yeah.
Why does she have to?
Because Midaraisa, there's a zika over there. Midaraisa, there's a zika between Midaraisa, there's a zika between Rivka and Levi. You know, it's leaving aside. Let's leave out Midaraisa. Midaraisa, fine at this point. Let's ignore Reuben and Sarah because Sarah never got married to Shimon Midaraisa. But fine, you have Shimon's wife Rivka needs yibum, the usual. only midrabanan. She's also, because we do have to bring Sarah back into the picture, and therefore they have to stress through chalitza. No, you only midrabanan. That's what we're saying. In general, throughout the Masechta, whenever we're going to say that somebody has to have chalitza, not yibum, usually it's going to mean that she's mutter midaraisa for yibum, but also midrabanan.
If she did just a maimer.
In this case, it's because maimer. There can be many other cases. We'll go through. The Gemara says Amar of Nachman. Now we have the Mishnah had mentioned over here. The Mishnah, we had over here two women. Let's keep track of this. We had two women over here. We had Sarah and we had Rivka. The Mishnah, our version of the Mishnah is calling Sarah the first one and Rivka the second one. But there were other versions of the Mishnah floating around, apparently, where it was the other way around, where they were called the other way around. So Amar Rav Nachman, man datani rishon loy mishtabish. If you learn the Mishnah, if you say that the rishon refers to Sarah, then that's not wrong. You can understand why that is. Or man datani shnir loy mishtabish. And if you call her the second one, is also there's a logical reason to do it for Sarah to be called the second one.
And the first one.
No, for Rivka to be called the first and Sarah to be called the second.
Well, that's the case that we doesn't know.
No. In other words, we're just clarifying here. In these diagrams, we're calling them Sarah and Rivka.
Right.
In terms of the Mishnah, we're calling them Rishona and Shnia. Which one is Rishona? Which one is Shnia? There were versions of the Mishnah where they called Sarah, the wife of Reuven, the original, the dead brother, the first dead brother, called it Rishona, and Rivka, the wife of the second brother, is called Shnia. But there were versions where it was the other way around. And Rav Nachman of Yitzchok is pointing out either one is correct. You can understand either one. Why? Mandatani Rishona lo mishtabish. If we call Sarah Rishona, then that's not wrong because my Rishona lo nefila. She's the first one to have to have Yibum or Chalitza. She's the first one for nefila, meaning to be in a state of having to do Yibum or Chalitza. Mandatani Shnia lo mishtabish. But on the other hand, if you call her Shnia, if you call Sarah the Shnia, is also a logical reason. My Shnia, Shnia lo nisuin. Because why? She's the second one to get married to Shimon. Shimon was already married to Rivka. Now, when he does Yibum with Sarah, she becomes his second wife. So, therefore, it's logical to call her Shnia. They might ask why. Milei askinen diyibum v'akachkines. Why? Who says the Mishnah is talking about that Shimon was married to Rivka before he ever did Yibum with Sarah? You could just as well have the other way around. First, he did Yibum with Sarah. Afterwards, he married Rivka. And then there's no logical reason to call Sarah the second one. Yeah. She's the first for both of them, it would seem. Ella, my Shnia Shnia b'nisurin. Okay, but we still have a different way of explaining. It's her second time getting married, right? But still, we could still understand that Rivka is called the first one because she's only been married once, whereas Sarah has been married twice. Okay, now the basic question: Eishes Achav Shlahay by Lama Heichak Siva. Where does it say anything in the Torah that Eishes Achav Shlahay by Lama that there's no zikah over there? There's no chalitza or yibum. Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, because Amakra, the pasuk starts out Ki Yeshu Achim Yachda.
We never went into the specific point.
We've talked about it in the Kodesh, but we never said where we know B'chalya.
Right.
Amar of Yehuda, Amar Rav, Amakra, because the pasuk says Ki Yeshu Achim Yachda, when brothers dwell together. Together meaning Shaitzel, I mean Yeshiva Achas Ba'olam. This means they live together in the world at the same time. As opposed to a brother's wife, who the brother was born after the first brother died, then they weren't Barlamai, they weren't Yachdov. And Yachdov also means Miyachadim B'Nachla. Also the word Yachdov means that they're together in Nachla, meaning that they're able to Yaushin one from the other. Prafla Achiv Mina'im, as opposed to brothers from the mother's side. Now, brothers. There's a different point that we're saying we're learning two things over here. Number one, that they have to be living in the world at the same time. And number two, b'chol, when we're saying Yibum is brothers, a brother dies and how do we know? It has to be brothers from the father. That's right, because we're saying Yachdav. Only brothers from the father are capable of yarshining each other. Namely, if one brother dies childless, which is exactly the case of Yibum over here, then his brother inherits his property. There's no way in which two brothers who share one mother and not one father are going to yarshin from each other. They could both yarshin from their mother, but they're not going to yarshin from each other because each one belongs to a different shevet or whatever, to a different family. Rabba Amar, Rabba says that there's a different reason we can learn that Achim in connection with Yibum, Dafka means paternal brothers. Achim and Av, Yalif, Ach v'Achim, v'bnei Yaakov, because we learn by Gzeira Shavah from the word Achim from the sons of Yaakov. They call themselves Achim. just like by Yaakov, their brothers, they all have the same father, Yaakov, all 12 of them, but they have different mothers. Afkan mina av v'leminaim, same thing by Yibum, means they have to have the same father, doesn't necessarily mean they have to have the same mother. No, but the point is that's what we're making. Zeru shava ki yeshu achim yachdov, and shnei also avadacha achim anachnu.
Yachdov.
No, from achim.
Achim.
Yeah. Yeah. We ask why v'leilach ach v'ach v'me'arayis. Why? Why don't we do it instead? Do a zeru shava from the fact by arayis. Arayis applies when the pasuk says you're not allowed to marry your brother's wife. It applies equally to a maternal brother or a paternal brother. So why don't we learn from there? The answer is donim achim me'achin ben donin achim me'ochicha. Because
broaden the
rule, yeah. So maybe Yibum would apply to a brother, to the brother from the mother's side as well, yeah. No, because donin achim me'achin ben donin achim me'ochicha. Because by Bnei Yaakov it says the word achim. By Yibum it also says achim. By Erva, by Arias, it does not say achim, it says ochicha. Erva says ochicha, like the Gala, it's a different word, different form of the word. Yeah. That's why, man. Nafkamina. Why? What's the difference? Hatana dvei Rabbi Shmuel, v'shava kain uvakain, zuri shiva zuri bia. We see there is a case where we make a zeru shava between words that are not at all the same, not even the same shorosh. By the dinim of tzaras abayis, we have over there. By tzaras abayis, it's a long thing over there that we learn by a zeru shava from v'shava kain uvakain that the same thing the kain does at the end of the first week, if the tzaras is spread, that he peels off the plaster and whatever and puts in new stones and whatever, the same thing at the end of the second week. Only at the end of the third week, if the tzaras is still there, does he tear down the house.
And then we have smoking that week.
No, that's not a matter of smoking. No, it's not a matter of smoking, because it's all in one section, because it's all dinim with the dinim of tzaras abayis. But no, we learn a zeru shava from v'shav and uva, even though they're completely two different words. So why can't we do achim and achicha? The answer is okay. Let me say zuri shiva, zuri bia, the same thing that applies when the kohen returns, the same thing applies when he comes. The answer is okay, hani milehecha deleka midijamile. Fine, you know when we make a gzeder shava, when you have no other similar word. By tzaras habayis, we need to know what happens at the end of the second week. There's no similar word to v'shav or uva to use, so necessarily we have to use the other. But where you have a word available that's similar to it, midijamile, yafin, and we would rather learn from the one that's exactly like it. So achim from achim, not achim from achicha. Next question, v'leilof achva achva miloit. Fine, why don't we learn a gzeder shava from the word achim that Avraham says to Loit? And what are Abraham and Lot? Their uncle and nephew. So say that Yibum applies between an uncle and a nephew. In addition to. The answer is no. Mistabrim Bnei Yaakov Havalei LeMelech. It's more logical to learn it from Bnei Yaakov Mishum de Mifni, because the word Achim over there is extra. Mufne, as we've had before, that the word has to be mufne in order to be able to learn a gzeder shava from it. Midahavale lemichtav shneim also avodecha bnei avinu. Because the pasuk, where do we see this word achim? They're telling Yosef, Yosef is accusing them of being spies. They're answering them, no, we're all twelve, the sons of your servant, our father. That's all they had to say. Shneim also avodecha bnei avinu. We 12, your servants, are the sons of our father. Because of Achim. They don't have to describe their brothers. Obviously, if they all have one father, their brothers.
It doesn't use the word Achim,
does it? No, it does. Shnei Achim Anachnu. The Gemara is actually combining two different psukim over here, but whatever. In both psukim, where they're talking with Yosef, they describe both when they're just talking to Yosef, and when they repeat over what happened to Yaakov, they both times use the word Achim. For one second. Uchsiv Achim, and yet the pasuk says the word Achim, Shmam and Yalof Nuyi, which means that it's there as Mufna. It's there extra to Darsh and the Gzeir Shava. Whereas by Lois, Bepashtus not. Bepashtus, the Gemara is assuming at this stage that Abraham has to say the word Achim to Lois to mean we're close as brothers, we shouldn't be fighting. But it's not Lafnuya, because you couldn't have the Pasuk without it. Later on, in a few lines, the Gemara will take back up that assumption again. Yeah. But before that, the Gemara points out, the Itzrich Lemichtav Achim, the Itzrich Lemichtav Yachtav. Actually, the Pasuk then has to mention both the word Achim and the word Yachtav. Why? Because of Rahman Achim, if it only said Achim, Havam in a Leil of Achva Achim in Loit, then we would think we would make the Gzeder Shava from Loit. If you didn't have the word Yachtav,
right.
Because the word Yachtav tells us, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, that there are two people who share the same Nachla. Here actually Rashi is using a slightly different definition than before. Before we were saying that Yachtav means they're able to Yarshit each other.
They're No, no, no. That was a different thing. We were talking about it as far as Yerusha.
Right.
But before Rashi said that Yachtov means that they're able to Yarshin from each other, which only paternal brothers can do, or maternal brothers can't. Now Rashi's taking in, now the Gemara is explaining, and Rashi explains in a slightly different way. It's not that one is capable of Yarshining from the other, because if that's the case, yes, you can have an uncle and a nephew, one Yarshins from the other. If the nephew dies childless and his father is already dead, then yeah, his uncle inherits it. But you never have that an uncle and a nephew inherit the same property at the same time. It doesn't happen. Where you only have two brothers doing that. That's the other thing. So if it didn't say the word Yachtov, if it only said Achim, then we would say, yes, we do make the Gzeiro Shava from Loit. From uncle to nephew. I v'chitema Loit Bifni. You're going to say that the word Achim is not available by Loit because you need it for the sense of the Pasuk. No, Loye, indeed, Afnu Yemafne, it is indeed Mufne. Midahavle Lemichtev Reim, Uchtiv Achim, because Avram didn't have to tell Loit that we're brothers. He could have told them we're friends. And instead it says Achim.
It was not
Achim. The fact that he says the word Achim, that the Torah says, quotes him as saying Achim instead, Shema min ala Afnuye, that shows that it's Mufna.
Well,
true. Marshall talks about it, a couple of other Mepharshim talk about it also. It's true. It wouldn't be exactly the same thing, but it would still be the sense of it. When Avram is telling Loit, Achim Anachnu, actually it doesn't mean they're literally brothers, they're uncle and nephew.
Yeah.
He means we should be very close together, like brothers. But friends can also be described like that also. So you could have used the word Reim to describe that kind of thing also.
They don't mean brothers. Not
brothers. Right. So therefore, Kosev Rachmana Yachtav Amiuchadim Menachlo. So therefore, the Torah uses the word Yachtav, which teaches us not only, like we said before, that they have to be able to Yarshin from each other, but also they both have to be able to Yarshin from the same person. An uncle and a nephew can't do that.
That's
Kosev Rachmana Yachtav, but on the other hand, if the Torah only said the word Yachtav, Havaminadim Yachti Ba'aba Uvahima, then you would think it means they have to have both the same father and the same mother for Yibum to happen. So therefore we need the word Achim as well to teach us that it can even be brothers like the children of Yaakov who only have the same father. That's that we said. That was another meaning of the word Yaakov. That's we said. We're learning two things from the word Yaakov, basically. We're using it and we're learning that they're together in inheritance. Yeah.
Why in inheritance?
Right. Where would you think to have a havam, you know, that they have to have both parents in common to do yibum, when we see yibum b'nachla tala rachmana? The Torah makes yibum depend on nachla, the yokum al shem achiv ames. So we see that it's related to inheritance. We see that yibum is related to inheritance. Which later on in the parak we're going to talk about that's what it means when we say Yochem Hashem Achav Ames, means that the Yavam who does Yibum actually inherits his dead brother's property. And Nachla comes from the father, not from the mother. So why would we even have a Havam in the mother that need to have the same mother? That we need the word Yachta to tell, that we need the word Achim rather to tell us now. The answer is no. Sakhudat Istrich, we still need it. Sakhudat Hamina, because otherwise we might have thought Hova Chidushu, because after all, this whole thing of Yibum is a real Chidush. The Kamishtri Erva Gabe. Normally she's also as an Erva. Here all of a sudden the Torah is coming out of left field and being matter her. Ema Adam Yachti, Ba'abo Ve'ima. So you would think, maybe this is an exception. Maybe indeed you need them to have the same father and mother. Therefore, Tzricha, therefore we take a need the Torah to use the word Achim to broaden it, to tell us that even if they don't have the same mother, as long as they have the same father, as long as they're Yuchad and Benachla, then we're good. Then we're good. Now, the Gemara is going to start getting into a discussion here that involves a concept called Yesh Zika or Ein Zika. So we need to explain that a little bit. We've been talking throughout the first parak about the concept of Zika, that's after the husband dies, there's Zika, the Yavama has a connection or bond or whatever you want to call it between herself and the Yavam. She needs Yibum or Chalitza before she's allowed to go Yavama Lashok and marry somebody else. This is called Zika. A bond, yes. I saw an interesting little vignette that somebody tells about when he was a Talmud of Reb Shimon Shkop, that the great Gaon, That the one time he comes in, and then when Reb Shimon is preparing a shiur for the next day, and Reb Shimon asks him, can you tell me what the actual type to the word zika is? And Reb Shimon had been learning this Gemara for 50 years, and we know the concept of zika, but like, what's the literal translation of it? That's a simple thing, but whatever. We know what the concept is. Now, when we're going to talk about it here, yesh zika or ain zika, it doesn't literally mean whether there is zika or there isn't. Obviously there is. Otherwise, there's no concept of yibum. When we're going to start talking about over here in the Gemara about the idea of yesh zika or ein zika, what it really means is, does the zika count as if it was a marital relationship already? Meaning, we talked about, for example, in the first parak, and we're going to have later on a lot more about this, that, for example, we know the Torah says that a man's wife is also to him. Whatever the lashon is over there, that the isha l'chois l'zikach. Suppose now a man is zakuk to, suppose now there's a zika between a man and his yevama. Would he be allowed to marry her sister? Now there's two ways of looking at it. First of all, we could say yesh zika, that even though he hasn't done yibum with her, she's already considered as if to a certain extent she's his wife, so therefore her sister would be also to him anyway. Another way we could look at it is ein zika. The zika does not count as a marital relationship. But we're not going to allow him to actually go and marry the sister, because then he'll be a dayan being mevatel the mitzvah of yibum. He's now, by doing that, by marrying the sister, he's actually preventing himself from doing the mitzvah of yibum. But you could still say, for example, suppose that the yevama dies before he has a chance to do yibum with her. Then if we say ein zika, it would mean he's allowed to marry her sister. If we say yes, actually that's not a good example really, because after a person's wife dies, he's allowed to marry her sister anyway. Another example, that's what the Gemara is going to talk about here about it a little bit, I guess we'll get to the actual Gemara tomorrow because it's late. But for example, consider the case if instead of a sister, if instead we have her mother, the Yavama's mother. The mother is always also even after the wife dies, the mother-in-law. So if we say yesh zika means he's forever also to marry that mother, whether he did yibum with this woman or not. If we say ein zika, means once she dies, once she's out of the picture, yes, he's allowed to marry her mother, if he never did yibum with her. That's what we're going to be discussing, yesh zika or ein zika. So at this point, I guess we'll leave it for tomorrow. But it's the same. No, that's a different matter. No, if somebody else has relations with the Yavama beforehand, we're not talking yesh zika to the extent that she's considered an eishes ish. Definitely not. We know it's only an issur lav, but yeah.
It's a bit like an arusa.
But it's less than an arusa would be the point, because an arusa, for sure, once a man is ma'aretz a woman, he's also to marry her mother for sure. If we say ein zika, then he is allowed to, yes. Vaguely, I guess, okay. Yeah. We continue.